Briefly qualify. At this time, the chairperson is briefly qualify. Requirements for chairing the meeting at the Central Orlando Group Saturday night speaker meeting is 1 year of continuous sobriety. Have Central as your home group and attend a group conscience meeting, which I have done all of those. And that's a good enough qualification for me today. Because I want to hear the speaker. And I want to thank everyone for letting me chair this meeting this month. You know, it really means a lot to me to be able to, you know, do some service work for my home group and ask people to come and tell their stories. Some of them I knew their stories, some of them I didn't. But I really enjoy it, and I'd like to thank all my speakers that are here tonight that have spoken for saying yes without a hesitation. And that's what we do in AA. We say yes to anything that deals with alcoholism without any hesitation. I want to introduce our speaker, and I love introducing speakers. This is my favorite part of them all. I want to tell you a little something about Shannon. When Shannon would first come in, I don't know if she really first come in or, you know, she'd been in, I would come and get coffee at the coffee bar. And I would see her and her sponsor sitting out at that little stoop there, doing like true alcoholics do, person to person, one-on-one, with a big book in the middle of them, sharing the big book, sharing their experience, strength, and hope. And I thought, isn't that great? Here's somebody new coming in and doing the deal. And then about 6 months or so later, getting coffee, and I see Shannon out there with a newcomer, one-on-one with another alcoholic, big book in between them, sharing their experience, strength, and hope. And that is what Alcoholics Anonymous is one-on-one, big book in the middle, sharing your experience, strength, and hope. And I've heard Shannon's story, and I know you're going to enjoy it. So without any further ado, Shannon.
Oh, I'm feeling all collywobbly. I'm Shannon. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 5th, 2007. I have a sponsor, and my sponsor has a sponsor, and they have worked the steps. I'm really grateful to be here tonight. I'm scared as hell, but I'm grateful. Before I start, there's something that I want to read. Alcoholics who still had their health, their families, their jobs, and even two cars in the garage began to recognize their alcoholism. As this trend grew, they were joined by young people who were scarcely more than potential alcoholics. They were spared that last 10 or 15 years of literal hell the rest of us had gone through. Since step one requires an admission that our lives have become unmanageable, how could people such as these take this step? It was obviously necessary to raise the bottom. The rest of us had hit to the point where it would hit them. By going back in our drinking histories, we would show that years before we realized that we were out of control, that drinking even then was no mere habit, that it was indeed the beginning of a fatal progression. To the doubters, we could say, perhaps you're not an alcoholic after all. Why don't you try some more controlled drinking, bearing in mind, meanwhile, that we have told you about alcoholism. This attitude brought immediate and practical results. It was then discovered that when one alcoholic had planted in the mind of another the true nature of his malady, that person could never be the same again. Following every spree, he would say to himself, maybe those AAs were right. And after a few such experiences, often years before the onset of extreme difficulties, he would return to us convinced. He had hit bottom as truly as any of us. John Barleycorn himself had become our best advocate. Why all this insistence that every AA must hit bottom first? The answer is that few people will sincerely try to practice the AA program unless they have hit bottom. For practicing AA's remaining 11 steps mean the adoption of attitudes and actions that almost no alcoholic who is still drinking can dream of taking. Who wishes to be rigorously honest and tolerant? Who wants to confess his faults to another and make restitution for harm done? Who cares anything about a higher power, let alone meditation and prayer? Who wants to sacrifice time and energy to carry AA's message to the next sufferer? No, the average alcoholic, self-centered in the extreme, doesn't care for this prospect unless he has to do these things in order to stay alive himself. Under the lash of alcoholism, we are driven to AA, and there we discover the fatal nature of our situation. Then and only then do we become as open-minded to conviction and as willing to listen as the dying can be. We stand ready to do anything which will lift the merciless obsession from us. Again, I'm Shannon. I'm an alcoholic. I wanted to read that because when I came in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I still had two cars in the garage. I had a family and I have two small children. I didn't have to lose any of those outward things. What happened to me was all on the inside. I'm a daughter. I am a sister. I am a sponsor and a sponsee and a friend and a girlfriend. And I am those things because of this program and what it's done to my life. My mom and dad are still together. They just celebrated 60-something years. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time in my childhood because there's really, it's not that big a deal. It was kind of normal. I'm that alcoholic who didn't have all the crazy stuff that happened. The first time I was asked to speak, I was like, wow, my story is so boring. What am I going to say? And then it was told to me later, it's the hope that I don't have to get to that point. I didn't have to get to the point that a lot of you did. There are a few things in my life that stand out. I had my first drink when I was 15 years old. And when I was small and younger, I never felt like I fit in. I always was insecure, self-conscious. I felt like I was inadequate, all those things. And like I said, I had my first drink when I was 15 years old, and as soon as I drank it, I knew that it was for me. It was in the basement of my girlfriend's house. Her father was also an alcoholic, and I do remember at one point that we actually had to go pick him up from a bar one night. As soon as I drank it, I felt like I had more self-confidence, had self-esteem. I was funny, I was cuter, and I was smarter, because I never felt smart enough either. And I couldn't wait till my very next drink. And so it began. It was in North Carolina. We had moved. A couple things that happened when I was small, just touch on really quick, was we pretty much were, I won't say we were wealthy, but we were pretty well off until the air traffic controllers went on strike and my dad went on strike with them, which really changed our life. My mom had to go back to work. She was a stay-at-home mother, and at that point she had to go back to work. And I found out later that there were times where their friends actually paid for our Christmases. We had piano lessons, and at one time I came home from school and the piano was gone because they couldn't afford to pay for the piano anymore. So the first couple times I told my story, I was blaming my parents for all the things that I felt. But now I realize that they did the best that they could with what they had. And I have a program. And I have a solution, and it's up to me to change. So that's what I'm trying to do. We moved to North Carolina at one point when I was in the 8th grade, 9th grade. And then we moved back to Titusville when I was in the 11th grade. I don't know if anyone knows, Cocoa Beach people might, but Titusville is really tiny. And when you move in the 11th grade to a tiny town, everyone knows everybody, and it is going to be really hard to fit in. So I started drinking more, and I was already started. I mean, I was blackout drunk pretty early on and doing things that I just didn't want. I couldn't remember a lot of things, and the things that I could remember, I wish that I hadn't. I couldn't. Anyway, when I was 16 years old, I was in the 11th grade. Because I was new and afraid, I also looked to boys, and I got pregnant when I was 16 years old. Now, I have to say that I grew up in church. I grew up knowing a God. So I grew up with morals. I had those. I wasn't one of these people who didn't have them. I had them. So for me, telling my parents was the hardest thing ever. But for me, it was a big struggle. I didn't want to do what I did, but I was afraid. And I chose to end the pregnancy. And I think at that point is when that hole that I had just got a lot bigger. Because at that point, I never felt loved enough. It was even worse than it was before. And now I had this guilt and this shame and this remorse of something that, for me, I can only speak for me, that I disagreed with, for me. And so because it was my standards and my morals, it really, really hurt me. Time went on. Anyway, I continued to drink and drink and drink, and it just got out of control. Or drinking and driving, loved it, was fun. I went to college. I never finished it. I never really finished anything. I had all these dreams and these things I was going to do, and then I never finished because I got bored or it was too hard. I didn't feel like it sounded good in the beginning, and then, whatever, later. I went to college, and I went to Mount Olive College, which is this tiny little town. I just want to get away from my family. It's this tiny little town in Mount Olive, North Carolina, and if you go to the grocery store and you go down the pickle aisle, you will see the Mount Olive pickles, because that is where they make them. And that's what it was known for, Mount Olive pickles. And I flunked out of that school. The pickle school. I actually started working for my uncle, who had an eyeglass. He owned like 4 eyeglass stores, and I started working in the lab, and I loved it. God bless you. And I truly loved what I did. But again, at some point, I never really liked me. So at some point, I know this is an outside issue, but an eating disorder came in, so I became sick from that as well. I'm still drinking, and I'm acting out on behaviors that are just killing my insides, like my self-respect, my self-worth. Just what happened. I started dating this guy, and I actually got engaged to him. Thank God we didn't get married. Because I look back now and I'm like, really? Bad. But he had a full truck with a boom, so it was fun. And that's when I really drank a lot. Then I was living with my grandparents at this time, because now I'm going to work with my uncle, and I'm living with my grandparents at this time. And we have a huge family. My mom has like 7 brothers and sisters, and it's extended. So everyone's my mom and everyone's my dad, and they're all watching everything I do, which was not fun at all. But there was one night I was getting ready to go to work, or one morning I was putting on my shoes, and my grandma says to me, honey, you might want to start sleeping with your light off at night, because the neighbor saw someone peeking in your window last night. And I was like, that was me crawling in. You know, I crawled out. Like, okay, okay, grandma, thanks for telling me. My grandfather passed away when I lived with my grandparents. I'll never forget it. I had gone to the refrigerator to get some orange juice. And I had poured some orange juice. It's these little things that you remember. And my grandfather was sitting at the table, and he gave me a hard time because I poured the glass and I didn't drink it all. And I poured it out. And I was like, whatever. Well, later on, I came back in, and he was sitting at the table, and his head was down, and I can see it clear as day. His head was down, and his hands were like on the table like this. And he said to me, he said, are you okay? Are you really okay? And that was when I was going through the eating disorder. It was really bad, and partying all the time. And I said, yeah, I'm fine, Papa, I'm fine. And I went out to party that night. And real early the next morning, we got a call that my grandfather had passed away in bed at home with my grandmother. And maybe had I been there, I could have been there for my grandma. Anyway, I became where I couldn't live there anymore. They couldn't take care of me. They couldn't handle me. It was too much. So they had a family meeting and shipped me back to Florida. I continued to work in the eyeglass place, and I continued my drinking and everything. I met a man, and I met several. But this one I stuck with for a little bit. And again, I do want to say that I use that too. I use the man to fill other parts of that little thing I couldn't fill. In here. Sorry. And another thing that I want to say is I never, like, when I ended a relationship, if I actually had a little bit of one, I never really ended it, so I probably have a lot of boyfriends still out there wondering when I'm going to call them back. I always just kind of bolted from it because I never liked confrontation. I was afraid of it. You know, I'm a people pleaser, so I think it's best if I just bolt out of your life and actually be honest and tell you I got to go. I don't understand that one. But anyway, so I met a guy, and we started dating, and he lived over in Orlando. And I would drive back and forth in complete blackouts from Orlando to Titusville. Again, I don't know if anyone knows that drive. There's nothing on that drive, nothing. And it'd be 3 o'clock in the morning. And I remember one time my ex had pulled over. We used to meet at like this Frogger's on Alafaya or something like that. So he pulls over. It's freezing cold outside. And he's driving me to Frogger's. And he's got the window down. And now I'm bitching at him because it is cold. And he's like, you got to stay awake. I got to sober up is what I need to do because I can't, you know, it's crazy. So I drove home that night. Woke up in the morning not remembering how I did it. Just by the grace of God, I made it. I made it home. And this went on for a really long time until I moved myself in with him. That was gradual. Like, hey, I'm here. Here's my cat. He didn't like that, but it's okay. I stayed. We were together for 5 years until he asked me to marry him, 4, and we were married after 5 years. I would love to say that I was a good girlfriend and a good fiancé, but I wasn't. I continued to drink. I continued to party. And I continued to do everything else that made me happy in the moment. Every time when I would do these things, it wasn't because, it was just because I was searching for something that I could never find. And every time that I did something bad, it made it worse. And that dealing with the guilt and the pain and all of that stuff was just really, really hard. And each time I did one thing, hated myself a little bit more. And when I first came in the program, people, I would hear them say how they wanted to commit suicide, and I remember saying, I never did that. I never want to kill myself. And as I got a little more sober, I'm like, what about that time that you took the actual razor and you tried to cut your wrist? I mean, it was a razor, but what if it hadn't been? What if it would have worked? And I was drunk and I did that. And there were times where I remember driving and I felt so alone or I felt so unloved or insecure that I remember driving. And I do remember saying to myself, what if I just ran off the road? I hit a tree. Would anyone care? Would anyone love me? Would anyone be there? I do remember those thoughts, and I didn't remember them until I started to get sober. Anyway, I married him, and I was having an affair when I married him. I'm just going to be honest up here because that's... it is what it is. And this is funny. I found out I was pregnant like, I don't know, 3 months after the marriage, after we got married. Maybe it was 6 months. And I was faithful for 7 whole years. Pat on the back. And my sponsor said alcoholics are the only ones who actually want, you know, congratulations for doing something normal people do on a regular basis. Like, I didn't cheat. Yay. I was honest today. So I have my daughter. Her name is Riley, and she is almost 11 years old, and I love her to death. I have another daughter, Emma. She's almost 8, and she's a mess. Both of them are a mess, but they're like a mama. Although I didn't do the behaviors that I did before, I still drank, and I still partied. By the grace of God, I was able to stay sober while I was pregnant. It was all God, because every day, and I was telling a friend the other day, it didn't matter, because I had heard that, okay, well, you can have a glass of wine while you're pregnant. So every day I had to tell myself, I'll have one today. No, I'll wait till tomorrow. So it was like I had to push it off. I had to procrastinate it, taking that drink while I was pregnant, which I'm really good at procrastination. So it worked. But as soon as they were born, I was drinking again. After about 7-8 years, I do want to say this, I did not want to get married when I got married. I knew that it was not the right thing, and so many times in my life did I do things that I knew weren't the right thing because I was afraid. My whole life was based on fear. I mean, my whole life. And I remember telling my dad the night before I got married, I don't think I'm ready for this. I don't want to get married. And he said, your whole family's in town. I'm like, okay, I guess that's a good reason to get married. I guess. And I'd never been on my own. I didn't know where to go. I didn't know what to do. So, and I didn't want to hurt his feelings. Oh. Really? Everything else I was doing wasn't hurting his feelings? So I went ahead and went through with it. And about 8 years afterwards, was it eight? No, the girls were smaller because I'm sober 4.5 years. So yeah, about 4.5, 5 years ago, I had been asked to be in a wedding at my girlfriend's wedding down south. And I went to the wedding, and the girls and John were going to come up the next day. I proceeded to get really, 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 really wasted, and I woke up with someone. And when my children and my ex-husband showed up, walking, I'll never forget the way it looked. That was probably the worst I ever felt in my life, because I had to look at my children and him, and they had no clue. But I did, and I had to keep it in. And all the other people who were at the wedding knew what I did. It was terrible. And he didn't deserve that because he was a really nice guy. Anyway, did that stop me? Mm-mm. I continued to do what I did best, and I continued to drink because now I hate myself so much that I have to. And I'm starting to drink more. And before, when I would only drink on the weekends, see, for me, I didn't have to drink every day, but as long as I knew when that drink was going to be, I was okay. Once I put one drink in me, I was off. I wanted to keep drinking, and I had to keep drinking. And if I had to stop, I was going to be miserable. There were times when I did, you know, I tried to control it, but it wasn't fun. And the obsession was always there. Like I said, I always knew when I was going to have my next drink. Well, now I'm starting to drink more frequently. I mean, of course I am. And I remember asking people, how much do you drink during the week? And do you get drunk all the time? And do you drink at home alone? You know, stuff like that. Well, if I'm asking that, I probably have a problem. My parents, I had a problem earlier on. My parents always thought I was an alcoholic. My grandmother's an alcoholic. She was the hide the bottle kind of drunk. I wasn't like that. And she was very angry when she would drink. So, to me, an alcoholic was someone who drank every day. So my parents would tell me, but I'm like, no, whatever. And she actually, I know I've told this 8,000 times, but I think it's funny. She actually was hit by a car jaywalking and got sober. It's the truth. She was jaywalking and got sober. She actually was in the hospital and had to stay because she got a staph infection, and that's what happened, but it's the truth. And she's very proud of me today, and she's still sober. Yay, Grandma! skipping forward, it had gotten so bad, and my life was just so unmanageable. I had gotten busted once again because this person had come back into town, and this horrible evening had happened where my ex found out. It was just awful. I could not stand myself anymore. Where I was with the self-respect and the self-love, and there was nothing. And to look at myself, you know, I could try on the outside to do whatever, but it was just masking all the pain that was on the inside. And it was suggested that I go to a meeting of alcoholics, or I go to a therapist. And when I went in, she gave me that test. I took the test, and so if you answered yes to 3 or more or something like that, I think it was like 10 that I answered yes to. I was like, wow. But I didn't go right away. My very first meeting, and that's enough about that stuff. My very first meeting was a Sunday night at 6 p.m. And I used to have mommy-daughter nights on Sundays where I would sit up with one of them and the other one would go to bed. And we'd have this thing. Well, I started going to meetings instead. They actually mentioned that the other day. They're pretty pissed off about that. But I started going to meetings instead. My very first meeting was a 6 o'clock beginners meeting, and I walked in, and I was scared to death. I was crying. I was sitting right back there, where I think we're like Brian's sitting. But everyone was really nice to me. There was this one girl who, she had put her phone number on, and she was the first person that I called, one of the first people. And she actually met me at my second meeting, which was at the greenhouse. And the whole time I'm driving to that meeting, she's on the phone with me talking me through it. It's going to be okay, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, this is my second meeting in a week. It's good. And I get there. This woman helped me so much. And what she did for me in just the two times or the couple times that I spoke with her, I want to be able to do that for someone else. And the reason I mention that, because we do that a lot, that's what we do here, is that she is no longer with us because she went back out. And she had two small children and she didn't make it back in. And I have to remember that. I've also had another friend pass away this year from this disease. And I'd heard that that would happen when you stay sober long enough. I saw my first one. That was tough. But I'm here, and I'm sober by the grace of God, one day at a time. Today I don't want to drink. Anyway, I did that. I came back a couple weeks later, and I remember running into someone. I'm like, where have you been? I'm like, I've been here. This is like my third meeting in 2 weeks. It's 90 and 90. What? I mean, I have to go to 90 meetings in 90 days? Wow. Luckily for me, I like boys, and I like the one that I talk to. So my 90 and 90 wasn't so hard. I mean, I didn't do the right thing, but it kept me here. So it's all good. Thank you if he's here. Anyway, I got a temporary sponsor right away, and she was very sweet and lovely, and she was easy for me to get away with stuff because I didn't see her very often, and I sat on my fourth for quite a while, and finally I got a different sponsor, and I had that sponsor for almost 3 years, I think, or 2.5, and I owe so much to her. She's an amazing woman, and I truly love her, and she got me through a lot of tough times. The person that I walked in as is not the person that I am today because of this program. And I have not mentioned this yet, I don't believe, but it is because of my higher power that I'm here today. I always believed in God. There's a difference between belief and faith. Belief comes first. I read this not long ago. It's kind of like a car mechanic. If you're new in town and you go to your neighbor, you say, my car needs fixing. Can you recommend anyone? And they tell you, yeah, so-and-so down the street. They've done my car, worked on my car, whatever. You believe that that mechanic can fix your car. Once the mechanic fixes your car, now you have faith that it can be fixed. So if you're new or coming back, we've all worked these 12, well, not all of us, but a lot of us in here have worked the 12 steps. And for me, I believe that it worked for the girls who were here for me. And now I know that God can change my life because he has. I have a long way to go, but just a few things is that when I came in here, as I said, I never was faithful to anyone. I jumped from one relationship to another, and I had no self-respect, no self-worth, and I really didn't have any friends because the people that I thought were my friends really weren't. I was a stay-at-home mother. That was the decision that my ex and I had made, and I'm truly grateful for that because it has kept me with my kids, and I have been able to be there for them, to pick them up from school, to take them to school, and to be there for their little award ceremonies. I wouldn't give that up for anything. My children do not have to see a drunk mom as long as I stay vigilant, as long as I keep doing this one day at a time, and as long as I stay spiritually fit. The marriage ended, obviously. Who wouldn't? But I can say today that because of this program, and because of my higher power, we are friends today. We work very well together with the children. And they seem to be quite happy. I have been in a relationship for over a year, about a year and a half. Not once have I, as my sponsor used to say, slid my foot out to try to keep somebody open just in case this doesn't work, because that's what I used to do. Hey, how you doing? This guy didn't work over here. Sorry, hon. I have not done that. There's no one in the wings. I have tried very hard. What this program has done for me is the things that I did, God removed the character defects. But I have to take the action to make sure that they stay kind of at bay. And so what I do today is I don't put myself in the positions that I used to put myself in. You know, I don't get a phone number and say, ooh, well, I need a new guy friend, because I don't have enough. You know what I mean? I have my girlfriends now, and if I need a number, it'll be a girl's number. Everything else, he gets. And I know that sounds silly, but that's, for me, that's a big deal. I mean, that is a really big deal, that a year and a half. It's the hardest place to work. The program is with your family and your close relationships. It's easy to come in here and do it, but it's really hard to carry it out there. Today, I have my own place, which I'm so grateful for. It is tiny, because where I came from was much bigger and more stuff, because I never had to worry about anything. I could pretty much do whatever I wanted. I was that stay-at-home housewife who juggled the credit cards, who kind of put us in debt, and all those things. He's funny. And did all those things, but it was okay. Now, I live in a much smaller house. I still kind of juggle the credit cards. But I'm happy. At once I thought that what I wanted out of life was to... I know this is going to sound funny, but it's true. This actually went through my head. It would be really cool, because my ex was a liquor distributor, so it worked perfectly. We got to travel a lot. We got to do all these things. And I remember some of it. Not all of it. But where was I going with that? I don't even know what I was going to say about the liquor. It's a good thing I don't remember the liquor stuff. But anyway... I still, when we split up, I started, I know what I was going to say. My lifelong dream was to be one of those women who had tons of facelifts and big poofy hair and go around to museums and look at the artwork. I hate that, but I thought it would be cool, because that would be like the status thing. And today I actually clean houses and scrub toilets. It's true, but I like it. You know, it is what it is, and that's for me. And I love the people that I do it for, and it helps me, once again, be there for my children. You know, I'm not ashamed of what I do. What this program has taught me is I do have some self-respect. I do have some self-worth. I have met the most amazing people in this program, and I have the most amazing friends. And last week, I think it was, I was asked to go with some of those friends out to dinner and to a different meeting to celebrate one of those friends' double digits birthdays. And the overwhelming gratitude that I had, because I was asked by these women who I look up to and admired and love dearly, was amazing. I mean, I can't describe the feeling that I had. I was crying because I was grateful, and I was crying. I mean, it was just, it was the coolest thing, because I want to be like them when I grow up. But if I keep coming back, I might be able to. Anyway, this program has done a lot for me, and you know, I do have the self-worth and self-respect. Do I like everything about me? No, I still have a lot of character defects. Who doesn't? I mean, they're there. They're not the same ones that are as glaring when I first came in. They're more subtle ones. Those are the harder ones to get rid of. But you know what? Today, I accept that. Doesn't mean I don't want to change it. Because what I have found, that if God can remove my drinking and the obsession for that, He can change anything. But I have to continue to take the action. And I'm going to try to tell this and not screw it up. Stop laughing. This priest and this rabbi had these two prize fighters. Because last time I told this, I totally forgot the punchline in front of people. So this priest and this rabbi had these two prize fighters. And they went in, and when they got there, the priest's fighter got on his knees and did the sign of the cross. And the rabbi said, that must be your guy. What's he doing? And he said... No, he goes, what does it mean? And he said, it doesn't mean shit if he doesn't know how to fight. And the proof is, I can pray until I'm blue in the face, and God's going to be there for me, but unless I take some kind of action, you know, it's kind of like the toilet paper they told me. He gives us toilet paper, we have to use it. That's how it works. And as long as I stay in action, then I get the result. Is he making faces? Then I get the results. And that's what it's like for me today. And the brightest spot of my life besides my kids and coming in here is that I'm cheering for the hotline now. So if you want to work it, see me afterwards. But and also that I work with other girls, because so many women worked with me. They gave me their time and their love and their support. And it's true what they say, that we will love you until you learn to love yourself. And they don't pass judgment on me, and they will listen to me 5,000 times, say the same thing over and over again, and they're still there for me. And I have a group of girls that I work with right now who I really, really love. And the closest that I got to a drink was about a month ago in 4.5 years. And I'm only saying this because I didn't drink. It was what was in my head. And the pain that I was feeling, I just wanted it to stop. But because of this program, I had a different solution. And I called someone who's in here today who I'm really glad she picked up the phone. Because she helped me, she walked me through what would happen if I did. Another thing is that my sponsees keep me sober. And they were with me through that time. And they were calling me, making sure I was okay. And that's how it works. We're here for each other. And if you're new and you think you don't have anything to give, you do. Because even just a smile will keep someone sitting in a seat. Just a hello, that's service work. I have to do this because it keeps me sober, but I also like to do this because it feels good. And the more good things that I do, the more self-esteem and self-worth I gain and self-respect. And that feels really good. It's kind of like that other stuff. You want to keep doing it. I spoke with a girl yesterday who called me, and she called me just to tell me, I have been dating someone that I have not slept with for a month. You know what? It's funny, but it is a miracle. And I got goosebumps when she said that, because this is someone who has struggled and struggled and struggled, just like I did. And she finally has some of that self-respect, and now she can know what it feels like and want to keep it. Whereas before, I mean, if you don't have it, you don't know how good it feels. And like I said, I'm just truly, truly grateful to be here. And thank you for asking me to speak. And there's just one more thing I want to read before I go. And it's a little early, but God's done talking. We realize we know only a little, and God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past, and give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thanks for letting me share.